Army marches on its stomach, and so does the community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Good morning, and welcome to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I can't wait to share some special recipes with you with the help of our special guest, Ashley Levine. Now, Ashley Levine, please listen to the name of her book, because there's something exciting coming up in the program. The name of her book is Home Cooked and Heartwarming. And is this a beautiful home cooked and heartwarming book? Ashley Levine knows exactly how to appeal to a younger generation. A younger generation of cooks who want to impress their loved ones and friends with delicious meals that don't require any formal culinary training. At the same time, more mature cooks, I think maybe she's talking to me here, more mature cooks will find a wealth of ideas to inspire even the most jaded of palates. Ashley's own love affair with food started in her grandmother's kitchen when she was about the same height as the kitchen table. As she says of one occasion, in that second of pancake-fueled ecstasy, I saw for the very first time the utter perfection of food and its ability to bring people you love together. So her writing and her style is so conversational, and Ashley takes you on a journey that's filled with memories and delicious flavors. So I'm going to ask a question now. She's not only sharing all her delicious recipes with us, but she's actually sharing a book. So if anybody can remember what I said, what the title of her book is, you will win the book. First call in on SMS 34519 and give us the name of the book. Home Cooked and Heartwarming. You will be the lucky prize winner. So, I've got some suggestions to help us get through this week, because next week I will be giving you some wonderful Rosh Hashanah recipes where I'll be sharing. I challenged myself to see how many simanim, that's symbolic foods, I could use. And with the apples dipped in honey and whatever. And so I really got started with a lot of those recipes, which I'll be sharing with you not next week, the week after. And get your meat into the freezer. So I'm giving you a hint. Get some brisket, get some chicken schnitzel, get some pickled hump if you want, and some raisin rope. So without further ado, let's not waste time. Let's go straight to Ashley. Tell me a little bit about Ashley, how she got involved with cooking, who influenced you.
Thank you for having me. It's a difficult one. I think it almost happens quite without you even realizing it, I suppose. I grew up in a house full of people that always cooked, and my parents entertained quite a lot, and my aunt was a caterer, so I remember going there as a child. My mom didn't work, so we used to go there as a child, and we'd have to be the people that I did the scone cutting in the morning. You know, I could cookie cutter 400 scones in a morning, and so I was always surrounded by food. I think it was when I was a little bit older and I moved to London that I really realized how much it could bring people together and make friendships. I suppose when you invite somebody for supper, that's, I suppose, my love language. I assume, like, people come over, I cook for them, they feel loved, hopefully. And I think that happened a little bit later on in life, and that's where my love for food kind of began.
So you went to London, was this before you got married?
I'd been working at Investec for a very long time, and it was straight after school, so I decided that I'd go and see the world a little bit. So I moved to London for a year and a half, and I suppose it was the first time that I'd ever had to cook for myself, you know. I lived with my mum before and my parents, and I'd obviously do a little bit of cooking at home, but it was the first time it was just me, and I had to go to the shop and find produce and bring it home and cook for myself. So it was the first time I actually really understood the gravity of all of that.
Right.
So
did you meet your husband there?
I did not.
Your husband is Grant?
My husband is Grant Levine. I met him here in Joburg. We were very good friends before we got married and before we got together, and he is just wonderful.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the recipes, you just sum up everything in your life, so to speak. You talk about your gran, you talk about your mother, you talk about the beautiful short rib that you made for your husband, I mean, that he just absolutely loved. And everything is just so warm. And you're a little bit like me, you're frightened that you're going to under cater.
Always.
It's something hereditary. I don't know what it is.
I know.
Fear that we're going to under cater somewhere. So you start off by saying, you talk about your Omi.
Yes, okay, yes, my so mum's mum.
Your mother's mother, okay. Mm-hmm. And how, such beautiful stories of how you were making things in the kitchen in her wedding dress.
She was the best. She used to have boxes of jewelry and beautiful coats and I'd love dressing up in all of her things, and she never ever once said, you know, don't wear that. It's too precious, or you know, don't mess that up, or don't wear that. She was always very happy for us to meddle in all of her cupboards and pull out all of her things, and she was just, she still is the best. She still rolls around on the ground with my children.
Really? That's amazing.
At 85, she's still amazing.
And grandparents are allowed to do those things.
Yes.
You know, my kids keep shouting at me and saying, Ma, you know, you need to instill a bit of strength there, and they don't have to pull out the whole cupboard when they start baking. But you know what? I just let them explore. You know, finer motor skills, etc. We make up some kind of excuse.
Indeed.
Okay, so would you say that she was your biggest influence?
She probably was.
Yes.
In terms of my earliest cooking memories, right. But she worked quite a lot when I was little. So my mom really was. The one who kind of taught me how to cook.
Okay. And your aunt that was the caterer?
Yes, she was amazing. That was my grandmother's sister.
Your grandmother's sister. And what is her name?
Auntie Rhea.
And what catering company?
It wasn't a company. She's to cater. Well, it was a company, I suppose, but she's a caterer for all sorts of TV productions and things like that. Yeah. So it was a very interesting time. I mean, all the recipes that I kind of have for crunchies and for biscuits and things were for 400, you know.
400 biscuits at a time.
Yes, so for the book, we had to really, I had to go back and, you know, measure each cup by cup and make it a bit smaller so people can make 12, you know. You don't need 400
rusks. You see, so that's where it comes, the over-catering.
Exactly.
You know, from the 400s that you used to cater for. Now, this book, what made you actually decide that you wanted to write a book?
I was on maternity leave with my second daughter, Sophie, and I assess your second maternity leave is a little bit easier than the first one, I think. You aren't as, like, terrified and busy.
Yes.
So I decided to start collating all these recipes. My father's mother had given me a cookbook, and I decided to start collating the recipes. And I'm not very good at writing things down, so I have pieces of scrap paper and recipes written on the back of cereal boxes and all sorts of things. So I decided to start putting them in a central place. So I started making a Word document and kind of putting them in there. And when I was almost done, my husband said, you know, this is a beautiful book, and you should maybe have a look at publishing it. It was very, that's not what I started out doing, and it definitely wasn't an end goal, but it turned into something so beautiful, and it was such a great process. And I think because I didn't start out wanting to write a cookbook, it was an easier process and a more fluid one. I found that it has been quite enjoyable as opposed to stressful.
Okay, so I've been best asked you to please go into the kitchen now and prepare for the boardroom.
That would bring me out in hives. No,
isn't that amazing? I mean, so many people have said to me, "Do you do catering with?"
Catering makes me feel like I could cry just thinking about it.
I just want to cook for the love of cooking and just for my family. And
I certainly don't want anybody to pay for it, because that makes me come out and host too. I want you to just enjoy it and it be, you know.
Exactly. So do you do quite a bit of entertaining?
Grant, and bless his soul, has been so wonderful. He lets me entertain so very much and enjoys it too. So we have two dinner parties a week probably, and our family come over. So I entertain three, four times a week.
Huge crowd.
Not always, but my dining room table can seat 27 if we squash. So we are, we're very lucky. Yeah. Yes.
Lovely. We're just going to go to a break.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
I'm back with Ashley Levine, and we are talking about, and we're going to be sharing some wonderful recipes of hers, home cooked and heartwarming. And Ashley's just been talking to us and giving us a little bit of her background. And when I, as I said to you, when I first read this book, Ashley, it was just so warm, and I really felt that I was in the kitchen with you and Omi and Auntie Ria.
Sure, thank you.
I just thoroughly enjoyed you sharing those beautiful little stories with us. Now, your book is divided up into some wonderful chapters, breakfast and brunch delights, whip them up well in advance, seriously simple starters, home comforts. Okay, so what are your seriously simple starters that you'd like to share with us?
Obviously serial entertainer, but I also believe very much in actually being with your guests.
Okay.
So I think that there's nothing worse than going to somebody's house for dinner and they're in the kitchen in tears and you're outside having drinking wine. And I've always thought that you should really do things that are easy. I mean, if you have to, you can just go to Woolworths and buy something for a starter. As long as people enjoy your company and people are enjoying themselves. So I think that make something in advance if you need to, which is always good. If something you can freeze it and pull it out on the day or the day before, it's always a good idea. So that people enjoy you because they're at your house not to eat your food. They're at your house to visit and enjoy your company.
Well, so with Rosh Hashanah coming up.
Yes.
I mean, my
mother-in-law starts cooking 2 weeks in advance.
No, you, of course, you have to. But, you know, I always think to myself, my gosh, what do I look like? I mean, people arrive and, you know, they look so elegant and beautiful. They haven't stepped into the kitchen and there I am sitting like the sweat is coming off me. And every year I say the same thing. I'm going to be just as chilled as everybody else and just organize and get organized.
It's all about preparation and trying to get yourself sorted before everyone arrives.
Right.
And actually, no one knows what you were going to cook and no one knows what the picture looks like in the recipe book. So as long as it's edible and there's wine, everybody will be fine.
Okay, so now, Rosh Hashanah is coming up. What would you start with?
A good soup is always good.
Right.
I think. I mean,
your lovely butternut soup.
There's a butternut soup that's great. I mean, and these recipes, I mean, if you need to make them para or whatever, you can absolutely leave out cream and butter and that sort of thing. But, soup is amazing. I love just good old bread. I think breads and a tapas starter, a cold starter, is also always a hit. Hummus and that sort of thing and good breads and olives and things like that.
Which you've got in your book. You've got those wonderful dips and all those different pestos.
And if you start with that sort of thing, it's always easier because you can put it out even before people arrive.
But you're right. I mean, like on a Friday night, so often I just put little bowls and repeat it along the table. People take their challah, they dip it in and it's just so sort of chilled, you know, before we have soup or whatever we're going to have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that I think is always something to think about. And I would make it cold if you were going, I mean, if you need to. Make a soup that's easy to reheat, but keep your oven for things that you need to actually be cooking at the time.
Yeah, okay. So get organized, you've got a wonderful bread recipe. I was, in fact, you know, reading through some of the recipes and your methods of cooking. I mean, I was just talking about challah now, so I'm just jumping to that bread recipe, where you actually say, let it rise once, and then you put it into a cold
oven. And then rises.
Tell me a little bit about that.
The second time in the oven, which is so much easier. So you don't have to wait 15 hours for your bread
well,
to be ready.
Well, you see, this is what, I mean, what happens with me is the challah rises and the dough rises, punch it down again, plait it, let it rise again. This, you just actually took the bread. Tell us how you did it.
So you do a normal bread dough with some yeast. I use a packet yeast and all that jazz. And you, some salt and sugar and oil and obviously flour. And once you've kneaded it, you let it rise. I mean, I let mine rise sometimes. I make bread most weeks. Do it in the morning when I come home after breakfast or what have you. I put it into loaf tins or into a pot, and then you just stick it straight into a cold oven, turn the oven on, and then it rises slowly as the oven gets warm.
You turn it up to 190, yeah. So you actually put it in, and it was very clever. So I'm going to try.
Thank you. That was my mother's, my mother's grandmother. So my great great grandmother's recipe.
That's terrific.
But she used to use good old lumps of yeast. You know, those ones that you used to get, those live yeast balls.
Can we talk about the bread recipe quickly? Can you give it to us now?
Yes, sure.
Okay. And as for that quick and easy, cheesy, no rise bread, also delicious.
That's great because that's quick.
Yes.
Yeah. So great-grandmother's bread is a heaped teaspoon of sugar. Tablespoon, I mean.
Yeah, so you don't need much sugar. That's great.
Sugar, you know, you need sugar to make your
yeast. Yeah, but you don't need that happy. Much, I'm saying. Only one heaped. yeah, just
850 mils of warm water, not too hot, otherwise your yeast won't survive.
Right.
1.2 kgs of cake flour, and I just use normal cake flour. I don't use bread flour.
Right.
2 packets of dry yeast, and they're usually about 10 grams a pack.
Right.
And 2 tablespoons of salt, I mean 2 teaspoons of salt and 1 tablespoon of oil. Salt's very important. Bread tastes awful without salt in it. So
yes,
be sure you put enough in. And then you just mix it all basically all together. Knead it for a while and then, let it rise for, I mean, up to 2 hours. And then once it has, I usually put it in a bowl with, a packet over it if you use a towel or what have you, sometimes it gets a bit of a crust. So try and make it, you know, some
well, I go to Mr. Price.
You use those big bags.
Bribe them for a big plastic bag.
And those are the best. You can just reuse it.
Just cut it on the side and
exactly. and then let it rise. And then I transfer it to either a baking tray if you're going to make a freestyle bread, you know, so it can rise in each direction. Or I kind of sometimes put it in one of those pots, like a La Crusade pot, something that's quite heavy. That's always good too. It can bake in there or just in a normal loaf tin. And then you let it rise. And then you stick it into the oven.
And
at 190 degrees and you bake it for an hour. I normally knock it on the top or turn it out, knock it, and you can hear if it's done. If it's ready, it'll be a little bit hollow.
You don't actually knead it down again. You let it rise once and you stick it in risen.
Exactly. You've got to...
When you move it,
it loses a bit of its air, but, you know, don't fiddle with it too much.
Okay. So you just lift it and move it along. Okay.
And then you just let it cool on a rack. Don't let it cool in its tin or,
because it will get a bit moist probably. Yeah. Okay. So then we'll do that. Now, as a main meal, I'd love you to share your short rib breast.
Short rib is
but
just
please read
delicious.
The introduction because everybody will enjoy the lovely little story.
Young
that goes
lovers
with it.
Short
Young
rib.
Young lovers short rib.
The first home that my husband Grant and I shared was a sunny, charming little flat, which unfortunately was located up 3 long flights of stairs. Love, however, gave me wings on my feet, and the day we moved in, I joyfully lugged my prized possessions up those stairs, including my beloved baby blue La Crusade casserole dish. My plan for our first night of cohabitation was to make this gorgeous short rib stew, which Grant had confessed was his absolute favorite the first time I made it for him. We were young, childless, and drunk, and while the landscape had changed somewhat, his choice of dish has not. But back to that first night in the new flat. When the time came to prepare dinner, I realized that my beloved and only casserole dish would never fit into the flat's miniature little oven. So with the help of my good friend Champagne, I improvised, and the dish has now been amended to be cooked on the hob.
Ah,
the new version of the dish was a hit and one I used throughout my throughout my time in that little flat. Don't tell Grant, but in order to achieve the stew's slow-cooked deliciousness, I used to leave the pot on low, simmering away while I was at work, silently praying that the flat would still be there when I returned. That said, I don't condone such recklessness. Safety first.
Beautiful. And these are the kinds of stories that are, in, you know, just in front of most of the recipes. Probably say all, which makes it so much more interesting because you feel like it's you're enjoying part of your life while enjoying the recipe. So let's give the recipe.
So the recipe is 3 kilograms of short rib beef. You can use any kind of beef. I sometimes just use stewing beef or, you know, whatever you you have. But that's short rib's the best because it's got a bone in it and it's always more delicious if it's got a bone. And they've cut into 5 to 8 centimeter chunks. I used 200 milliliters of soy sauce, a third of a cup of honey, 4 tablespoons of grated ginger, 4 cloves of garlic, 3 spring onions chopped, 3 star anise, 2 liters of beef stock, 1 tablespoon of sesame oil, and 1 tablespoon of balsamic vinegar. And then I sprinkle the dish with sesame seeds afterwards. So you basically just preheat your oven to 160 or 170 if you're using a pressure cooker. So I have now come to a point where I just use a pressure cooker because it takes 45 minutes and I put all that stuff in and
I'm petrified.
Pressure cooker. I know. And my pressure cooker is actually my grandfather's. So you can imagine how terrified I am of it.
And somebody came over and they said, did you cook this meat in the pressure cooker? So I said, I don't have a pressure cooker.
I know.
I'm so frightened to use it. And everybody says, that's going to change your life.
The new ones are amazing and you can't blow a hole in your ceiling, I think. with the new ones, at least.
Pressure. Okay.
I think the electric ones are even better, but anyway.
Okay, so
I use a pressure cooker and then do it for a slow amount. I mean, a quick 45 minutes, and then I add it to a casserole and let it brown afterwards. You can, however, stick it in a 160-degree oven, and you can just let it go for 8 hours. Just keeping an eye on it, and you know, if you need to top it up with a little bit of water, you can. And then just sprinkle it with sesame seeds afterwards. It is delicious, and everybody will love you.
What about frying it first in a pot and then putting it into a crock pot? Could you do that?
People ask me quite a lot about crock pots and slow cookers. Mm. My only, I always feel like the sauce is never thick enough and things aren't brown enough and they don't get that. So you can put it in a crock pot overnight and then take it out and put it into a casserole and stick it in the oven to get brown nicely on top. The sauce needs the browning. You know what I mean? Not just the meat. So even if you brown it in advance, it's not always
just to reduce the sauce.
Yes,
so that it gets
and it needs to get a nice crust on it. So you can try, but you might not get the same result.
Okay. So we've got our soup organized. We've got
short rib,
which sounds delicious. Now, what about your mother's sticky chicken?
My mother's sticky chicken.
We always have to have an alternative.
Delicious.
You know, comes Rosh Hashanah or Shabbat.
There's something, about, sweet, sticky, meals that I absolutely adore, and so do my children. So I think that's why we all love sticky chicken so very much. I'm trying to find the recipe in this book.
Okay.
For you, so I can kind of.
I have the recipe.
Know where I am.
Yeah.
So I've made it in my sleep. So I can make it in my sleep. And it is so quick. So you can just make the marinade in advance and you can just shove it over the chicken as soon as you get home in the afternoon or in the evening and, it'll be ready in 2 ticks.
Right. I've got the recipe here.
Should
have it. You know, I just think that chicken is such a lovely thing to serve with beef. And for those who don't eat red meat.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't you? But for those who don't, let's share your chicken recipe.
So I use 12 pieces of chicken. Just those variety packs are perfect. So, you know, drumsticks, thighs, wings, the whole bang.
Bri packs, we call them.
The bri pack, yes.
So when you phone an order, you order bri packs. Skin on or skin off?
Skin always on, unless you are not roasting. I don't like flabby chicken skin, but I love crispy chicken skin.
Okay.
So skin on.
Skin on, bri
pack. This doesn't actually work without skin. So people have tried it with, and it doesn't work. So you need the skin, and you need to put some salt and pepper over the top, and you need a half a cup of mayonnaise. You can use any kind you like. Half a cup of Mrs. Ball's hot chutney, but you can also use any type you like. Half a cup of smooth apricot jam. A half a sachet of instant brown onion soup. A little bit of olive oil for drizzling, and two cloves of garlic that you've chopped up. You basically just pour that marinade over the chicken and bake it at 180 degrees. And that is as easy as it can possibly get.
We will come back after the break with a couple more recipes. And
an army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie at Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
I'm chatting this morning to Ashley Levine, who is the author of Home Cooked and Hot Warming. And it's just recently come out, and it's available at most good bookshops and at Amazon.
And online.
And online. And if you need to contact Ashley, what is your email address, Ashley?
It is ashley@tothegoose.co.za. Or you can contact me on Instagram. I'm happy for that. Or Facebook at Ashley Levine Food.
Okay, there you have it. So you want to chat to Ashley or ask her any questions, you can. We were just chatting before the break about chicken and this lovely apricot chutney, onion soup, mayonnaise chicken, which is absolutely delicious. It's got that sticky sort of flavoring to it, and I can't wait to make that. Right. So now we have a couple more recipes that we can talk about. Now, one of the recipes that I saw in your book is actually one that you use with cut up meat that we can't use.
Yes.
But I decided to use it because it's just pickled anyway. I decided that I'm going to use it, make pickled hump with it.
Yes.
So I took a pickled hump, boiled it in the ginger beer, and it's waiting for me to get home.
I'd imagine it'll be delicious.
Okay, and it's either you can use pickled hump or pickled brisket.
Yes, brisket
that's
would be
one
amazing.
Of the cuts that we can use. And let's share that recipe. I think
just
that's
a
lovely
really
one.
A delicious glaze.
Yeah. You know, it's you take your two to three kilos of brisket or your pickled hump, and you just basically, to start off with, you would boil it in 2 liters of fiery ginger beer.
Yes.
2 bay leaves and some water. Okay, now this is the part that I'd like you to talk about.
So once it's out and it's cooled slightly,
yes.
You would then glaze it with, I make my own marmalade, but you can use any marmalade, good marmalade.
Now and does it have to have the peel in it?
It is better, and it does give it a, it doesn't have to though. It really doesn't.
Okay, because the minute some of my family see that, they'll say, no thanks. So I'll just pull it off. Before serving, or
exactly.
just use the
or
one.
Or just use the one without.
Without.
It's perfect.
Exactly.
Perfect. I mean, if they really are against marmalade, you can even use apricot jam, I'd imagine.
Okay. But it just sounds like.
And then
nice.
I use pieces of crystallized ginger because that gives it an extra gingery punch, and I am a ginger addict.
Mm-hmm.
And a 4 centimeter piece of fresh ginger grated.
Right.
And then 2 tablespoons of prepared English mustard. And 2 tablespoons of dark muscovado sugar. And then you do get ground clove, which is about 1/2 teaspoon of ground cloves. And you mix that all up and you slather it all over your delicious brisket and stick it in the oven to get a little bit brown and delicious. I would recommend putting tin foil at the bottom of your pan.
Right.
Because once that glaze has gone, hit the bottom of that pan, you'll never get it off again, and you'll curse me.
Yeah. Now, so, what about a cooking bag?
Perfect. Yeah.
Because that'll keep all the juices and the moisture
exactly.
in that. Okay. And then we just leave it in the oven to cook for
10 to 15 minutes.
Is that
it
all?
It just needs to get brown.
Okay.
So once
because you've cooked it, you've boiled it
exactly.
already, so it's cooked.
So it's just to get it nice and delicious and brown.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. And that I would serve, you know, very often what happens to me is I get a cooked pickled hump or whatever, put the sauce on, and I stick it in my chollen pot, as I call it, or my crock pot.
Yes, yes, yes.
Leave it the whole day, whole night through to Shabbos lunch. It is normally so soft and beautiful. Delicious. And it just falls apart. And I serve that with some rye bread.
Delicious.
So you've always got an excuse.
And some nice mustard.
If you overcook it, you just turn it into pulled beef.
I always feel that, I know people get frightened when you say you've got to cook something for 8 to 10 hours. And they get a little bit frightened of slow cooking. But quite frankly, it is the best because you have 15 minutes worth of prep. And then that's it.
I love.
And people arrive. And even if people are late or something's happened or everyone's having a good chat, you can pull it out at any stage.
Exactly.
And nobody's ever going to know, you know, it's never going to be overcooked or undercooked at least.
Now, what would you serve that with?
There's a lovely recipe in here for marrow-free potato salad, which you can make the day before.
Oh, yes.
And that really is a great recipe.
Yes.
Because the longer you leave it, the better it actually tastes.
Right.
It's made with a little bit of, it's made with like vinegar and things like that. Let me find it for you and we can read you those delicious things.
Have that printed here. And your nom nom noodle salad.
That is
You've got
beyond
to that.
Delish.
Because
beyond
that delish. Is just, looks terrific. In fact, I have, you know, it's the bat mitzvah weekend, the
King
David bat mitzvah weekend. So I'm doing Friday night for my nieces. So I will be doing quite a few of your recipes.
This is lovely because you can make the dressing 2 days in advance and then just shove it over some delicious noodles or even pasta is perfect.
Yes.
So pasta salad, kind of bow ties or whatever you've got.
Okay.
So the dressing, I'll tell you what you're going to put on the dressing.
Let's do the,
should we do the
mayo-free potato. That's also, that's a wonderful salad to have because.
It is because it's nice and it's quite filling and.
You can do it
feed a large
two, 3 days before.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
So it's about, it's a kg of baby potatoes. Those little tiny ones, the skin's on still. I leave the skins on.
Right.
And you just boil those in, put them in some cold water. I boil them from cold, and then you add a bit of salt to it, and boil them for at least 10 to 15 minutes until you can put a little fork in them, and they are done. And in the meanwhile, you can make the dressing, which is 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh chives, 2 tablespoons of white wine vinegar, a third of a cup of olive oil, 1/2 cup of dried tarragon. Tarragon is so delicious with this.
It is. It's sort of like licorice.
It is. Slightly anisey.
Love that.
A teaspoon of prepared whole grain mustard, a teaspoon of honey, some salt and some pepper. And you mix that all up. And you know what? When something's cold, it can take a little bit more salt. So don't be afraid of salt. And you mix it all up. And once you can either pour it on hot.
I was going to ask you that.
Because it does, you know, soak the dressing in a little bit.
So would you make a little bit more dressing?
A little bit, yeah.
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 And then on the day,
put a
bit more on top. Yeah.
Okay. And that is really delicious. And you can put them in the fridge until you're ready to use them.
And then we'll have the num num salad. Great salad.
I make this often, the dressing, and I take it if you go on holiday, we go to the bush or what have you. Because it takes quite a few ingredients, I like to, and they're all things that you keep in your cupboard, I like to make it in advance, put it in a little jar and take it with us if we go on holiday or what have you, and you can quickly, easily put a packet of noodles in to boil.
Right. Fantastic.
So you put a packet of egg noodles or whatever noodles you like, into a pot of boiling water, and I chop up a few vegetables, but you can really, it is so forgiving. You can do whatever you like in terms of veg. So I do baby corn and green beans and beetroot shoots or sprouts and baby tomatoes and some sesame seeds on the side. And then the dressing, which I put into, my NutriBullet so that it chops it up nice and finely and makes it into a beautiful dressing, is a large bunch of fresh coriander, 2 tablespoons of balsamic vinegar, 2 tablespoons of peanut butter, 1 tablespoon of grated ginger, fresh, a red chili, but you don't have to put the chili in if you are serving it to children, because my children love the salad of this noodle dish, and I don't put the chili in for them.
Oh, I put it in.
3 cloves of garlic, 1 teaspoon of sesame oil, 4 tablespoons of tamari, but you can use soy sauce if you don't have tamari.
Right.
A grated zest and juice of a lemon, and a tablespoon of honey, and then a little half a cup of olive oil. You don't need to use extra virgin. I mean, it's not necessary because this is such an overpowering sauce.
Right.
You won't taste it. And you zizz it up, and you can keep it in a jar.
Okay. And then you can actually get all your vegetables ready, chopped, and get them into little Tupperwares or Ziplocs.
Exactly. Just throw it together last minute. Throw it together.
Exactly.
Beautiful. I mean, this is also, I mean, I keep this in the fridge once we've had it for lunch or what have you, and it does keep for a day in the fridge. It's just not as delicious, and it's the vegetables that don't keep their crispness.
Right.
So you can make it a day in advance, but I'd keep the veg separate.
And now, if we don't want to use egg noodles, somebody's allergic, we can just use bow tie pasta.
Or
whatever pasta that you want.
You can even use those little rice noodles, those thin ones.
Yes.
And they're gluten-free too, so you can use those with pleasure.
Great.
Those are delicious.
Okay.
Very forgiving recipe.
We're going to go to a break quickly.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie at Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Hi, welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I am in the studio with Ashley Levine, who's sharing some wonderful recipes for us that we can make for Rosh Hashanah, we can make on Shabbos or wherever, whenever. And one thing that I was talking to you earlier about some of your wonderful cooking methods, and just we were discussing salads a bit earlier, but I just want to go back to one of your meat recipes. Okay, it is I would use scotch fillet. That's the cut that I would use. Okay, and it's the one with the horseradish creme fraiche.
Yes.
Okay, so now instead of the cream, obviously we would use Oily Whip and put a little bit of lemon juice in it.
And some horseradish, delicious.
And we'd use horseradish, and that's it.
Delicious.
So let's talk about that recipe if we can.
It's a lovely recipe because it is also very forgiving in terms of timing.
Isn't it fantastic?
You just leave it in the oven as long as nobody opens your oven. There are rules in the house. Don't open the oven.
And I would imagine, you know, a smallish kind of oven. I've got a very large oven, and sometimes it's a pain in the neck because you can't follow these recipes.
Because
it just cools down too quickly.
Yeah.
So we've got to use a smallish sort of oven. But nevertheless, let's...
So this is you need a 1.3 kg of deboned, any kind of...
Okay, I think
even probably use a brisket, I'd imagine.
No, because
you've got to leave it. Yes.
Brisket needs low and slow. So this we have to use a scotch fillet for.
Yes, no, agreed.
Okay.
So you cover it in salt and pepper and a little bit of olive oil and some garlic.
Just a little bit of garlic. You don't need all that jazz.
Exactly.
Jazz, right.
Exactly. So it needs to be room temperature, which is the key here. The whole piece of meat has to be room temperature.
Important.
So you can leave it out for at least 2 hours before you roast it. Preheat the oven to 220 or to 250. So that is quite a hot oven. Very hot, so that you can get the outside quite brown. You rub the meat with all the sea salt and pepper, and you pour over the olive oil and sprinkle with the garlic. Put it in a roasting pan with a rack. I'd prefer to use a rack's nice because then you get the bottom browned at the same time, so you don't need to turn it or anything like that. And you roast for 5 minutes per 500 grams. So for this particular roast, it would be, 15 minutes.
Right. On this high temperature. Highest we can go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you don't open the door, and you just leave it. You switch the heat off and you leave it for 2 hours.
And you put a note on the door.
Do not open my oven. And then, after 2 hours, it should be delicious. I mean, it doesn't need to be boiling hot. I think that, on summer days with friends in the garden, etc., you can have it almost you know, just slightly warm and, yes. and slice it, and it'll be beautiful with this horseradish creme or
this is such a wonderful idea for Shabbos because
You can do it
put in it
before, exactly.
And you just
you serve it with some delicious salad. You do.
Okay, that
but I mean if it's cold, it's cold. It's
yeah,
not the end of the world either.
Probably easier to make it in winter. But never mind. This is also a good time. So it's a good time now.
It is a good time now.
Okay.
To have, yes.
Right. And then, so we switch off the oven and we
switch off the oven and leave it. And then, yeah, and then you take it out and you slice it extremely thinly. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it isn't warm, you can put the oven on for a few minutes and make it warm again if you'd like.
Okay. Except on Shabbos, we can't do that.
Exactly.
So we just leave it and what it is, it is.
What it is, it is.
It is. That's it.
If it is during the week, you can warm it up slightly.
Correct.
And that's about it.
Okay, now the horseradish sauce.
That's just a teaspoon of grated or fresh horseradish, fresh or bottled, and then a little bit of Oli Whip and a few chives to make it pretty.
Okay, and there we have
I mean, they're basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ingredients, excluding salt and pepper, for this delicious beef.
Okay, now, going through all the recipes, I mean, I just didn't know which to choose. There's so many beautiful ones. So we've covered, three meats?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and we've got two salads. We've got the nom nom salad. We got, the potato salad without,
mayo,
which is quite nice. You can also, will you share the couscous, the whole wheat couscous?
Yes. This is lovely.
Now read the intro because this is such a lovely intro as well.
You know those moments when you have a million people scheduled to arrive and you look at the mountain of food you've prepared and wonder, but is this enough? Then you make another dish just in case. For me, that dish is always couscous salad. My paternal grandmother taught me that there is always enough food, believing that people are inherently even-handed and would subconsciously work out numbers and portions before serving themselves. I love my grand dearly, but the thought of somebody having to ration themselves in my presence causes me to come out in a rash. My favorite part of entertaining is sitting back and waiting, watching my guests dish up with reckless abandon. Actually, scrap that. My favorite part is watching them go back for seconds. I simply adore feeding people, the way I show love, the way I say I'm sorry, and the way I connect. And none of that can be done on meager servings. This dish works really well as an accompaniment for outdoor parties, picnics, and school lunches, and is quick and easy to prepare in large volumes. I mean, keeping some couscous in the pantry is, I mean, it's always there.
Always there.
Always there.
Yes.
So, 1 cup of whole wheat couscous. You can use normal couscous if you prefer, but I just keep the whole wheat one.
Right.
A half a teaspoon of garlic salt, one of my favorite store cupboard ingredients. Garlic salt is my favorite thing. 1 liter of boiling water or stock. If you want to just use boiling water, it's perfectly fine. Or vegetable stock. 3 sprigs of spring onions sliced. A handful of fresh mint leaves, roughly torn. 1/2 cup of pomegranate seeds. 1 40-gram packet of fresh rocket. A grated zest of 1/2 lemon. Salt, freshly ground black pepper, good quality olive oil, and 1/2 cup of flaked almonds that I've roasted. So you place the couscous and garlic salt into a large heat proof glass dish and bowl and mix them well. I pour the boiling water or chicken stock over the grains, enough to cover about 1 centimeter above the couscous, and then cover tightly with cling film and set aside. Once the couscous has absorbed all the liquid, carefully fluff the grains out of the fork, add the onions, mint, and all the rest of the ingredients basically.
Pomegranates, rocket, lemon.
Yes, and season to taste with a healthy drizzle of olive oil over the top. You can sprinkle with the almonds just before you serve. It is beautiful and it's colourful, and people always enjoy digging into that.
I love the way that you say roast the flaked almonds, because I think there's nothing better than textures, and I just love the idea of the crunch of the nut with the...
You need something crunchy.
Yes, you need something
crunchy.
And
you know, I roast every single nut I ever use, even if it's in baking. I hate bland nuts.
Right. Now, okay, so now we've got to, we've done our salads, we've done our lovely meats and whatever. Getting on to dessert. What do you find with desserts lately? Are people still going out there and making these whopping big pavlovas and this and that, or are we going back to just fresh fruit and limoncello?
Exactly. You can do some fresh fruit and limoncello.
Yeah.
I love just some good dark chocolate or some good fruit and a few sweets. People love digging into a few sweets after dinner. And I don't think it needs to be a massive, a huge event. You've already put the event on. Everybody's now eaten. They're full. They need something slightly sweet with their coffee. They don't need a whole extravaganza of things. I think a great platter of fruit that is also done that morning or the day before, yes, or even ordered sliced, I mean, is amazing. And right, everybody loves it. The cherries at the moment, I mean, you're getting those big boxes of cherries for 100 rand. And that, for me, is just delicious.
Just fill up that bowl with cherries and just pass them around the table.
Exactly.
You know, a very good friend of mine, Meryl Malkin, I'll give you a little shout out there, Mer, does what we call now a Meryl platter. Okay, now on that Meryl platter is Sally Williams nougat,
yes,
mango. She gets all these beautiful new exotic sweets that have just come out. She puts all this onto this beautiful big platter and it just goes around the table.
Exactly.
And you want to know something? She will serve a beautiful cake with it, and or pudding and ice cream.
And
what does everybody
eat? All of that stuff.
And so 3/4 of the cake is not touched. The ice cream, some people will have some sorbet or whatever, and she'll also have fresh fruit. But this platter,
always.
And you can put biscuits on it if you want.
And
go out and buy some biscuits.
Exactly.
And
lovely.
Just put whatever you want onto it.
No, divine.
And it just goes
around. That's the best kind of dessert, to be honest.
Yeah. Because I just find, you know, gone are the days of these huge fancy puddings, but, you know, everybody sort of looks to see, looks delicious. But they don't eat it.
I know.
So you
That's such a waste.
Such a waste. First time ever.
You can always make smoothies with all that leftover fruit if you've got it.
Last, you can. last Friday night, I was trying a new recipe and I served this pudding. Wow. And it was only 5 of us. It's never been such a small Shabbos. And everybody went back for seconds and thirds of this. It was like, basically a hot, trifle.
Delicious.
So it had without the jelly. So
yes,
instead of the jelly,
yes.
We had custard.
But that's actually not my. The jelly's not my senior as well.
So we had the custard and then I just poured this little bit of. I bought a box cake and I just poured that over the canned fruit, canned pears, canned apples, whatever I wanted. Poured that on top and it was beautiful.
Delicious.
So, there's another quick one for you guys to whip up.
Definitely going to try that.
Okay, so now let's talk about limoncello.
Okay. Limoncello, yes.
Okay, because I have to make that for Friday night.
You won't believe I made a whole batch this morning with my mum.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to sit down and have it tonight.
No, not tonight. It takes a few weeks, so that's the thing.
Oh,
it does take a few days. So it takes
so
10 days.
I wanted to serve it on Shabbos. Okay, never mind, then I'll have it the next week.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, limoncello is...
Read the intro. It's lovely. Okay, you know what we'll do? We'll take a little break, and I'm going to come back with this limoncello. Now, don't miss it. It's absolutely wonderful.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Hi, and welcome back. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and it's the Cooking Corner, and we are talking to Ashley Levine, who is the author of Home Cooked and Heartwarming, and she's sharing beautiful recipes with us so that we can whip up for Rosh Hashanah. Okay. So, now we're discussing limoncello, as I said before the break.
It's one of my favorite recipes of drinks that we kind of serve at home. And I keep it in my freezer so that it's nice and cold, so when people arrive, we can, you know, always whip it up after a meal, and it's so delicious.
Yes.
So, the recipe is just one sip of limoncello. Rockets me back to a very specific memory of meeting the world's brashest and most delightful waiter while on holiday in Italy. Grant and I were in a dark backstreet cafe surrounded by signs on the walls and broken English such as "No ask for steak more done." After enjoying the best steak Florentines of our lives, time came to ask for the bill, and as it inevitably does. But the waiter refused to let us pay until Grant and I had finished every last drop of the small bottle of limoncello he offered us. To be fair, we didn't put up too much of a fight. I loved him, the honesty of the food and the limoncello. So in honor of crockety, wonderful waiters throughout Italy, here is my take on the Southern Italian classic. So I take a bottle of vodka that you can get obviously anywhere, and I decant a little bit so that you can fit the lemon peel into. So I take a potato peeler and I peel the outside of about 6 unwaxed lemons. Make sure you wash them nicely. And you just shove all that delicious peel into the bottles, and I stick them into a dark cupboard, usually just in my pantry or what have you. And I just turn them every few days. So you just give it a shake and put it back.
Right. I think the most important thing is you don't want any of that pith.
Yes, because the white pith makes it so bitter.
Yeah.
So you really do try and get just the beautiful yellow part. Put it into a jar, or I just use the actual vodka bottle and just decant a little bit out so that you can put it in, get the zest inside. And then after about 10 days, you'll see that it's gone quite yellow. So after that, you can just strain it and stick. You strain out all of the zest. You put it into beautiful little jars, so that it can look very pretty. And then you just make a simple syrup with a cup of sugar and a cup of water on the stove until it's boiling, and let it cool. And then you add that to your vodka. Right. I know that original limoncello recipes were actually made with like 100% alcohol, but I'm not that.
Oh.
And then you add the water, the syrup, and it makes it a little bit, it dilutes it a bit, but that's just
poor liver.
Far too strong for me. So we use just vodka. I have tried it with gin before, and it's delicious, and you can also probably do it with cane or something else that if you prefer.
Right. So once you mix it up with the vodka and the sugar and the water, and you stick it back into the freezer, as you say.
I just keep it in the freezer then. And you can drink it anytime. Keep it in the freezer.
Can you add a little bit of something to it, or who would want to?
Drink it straight.
Drink it straight. But for those who... Like,
you could probably add a bit of soda. Soda or lemonade and make it into a long drink. That
lemon
would be
juice.
Delicious.
Yes. Mm. Put some lemon juice. I'm just thinking because I want to serve it this Friday. So I'm going to go home quickly and do some lemons and sort that out. Okay, so what is the last dinner party that you had? Okay, what did you serve? What's your favorite kind of meal? Do you go for themes? Do you go for...
It totally depends on the weather, how I'm feeling that day. Yes. You know, I really do. I also see what I've got in my fridge. I've been really into making pies at the moment because it's been so nice and cold.
In fact, I've got one on the stove at the moment.
Oh, delicious. That chicken pie, I make an Asian chicken pie.
Yes.
And it's so delicious, and it's made without cream. So you put the chicken in and you make it with a bit of Asian
spices and coconut milk.
Coconut milk, yes. And just a Thai green curry paste.
Yes.
And then you can put delicious corn in there and that what have you. And then I just scrumple up phyllo pastry, shove it on top, and then put a bit of olive oil on top, and it's delicious.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you go all the way and make each little person individual chicken?
I'm not a fiddly cook. Unfortunately.
Great. I cook in bulk
and I and I entertain in bulk. So unfortunately nobody, I never even plate up.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult when you entertain and have a lot of people. It's very hard.
People must help themselves.
Yeah. I agree. Quite right. Well, okay. So what else? Any other of your favorites that you enjoy? Any desserts that you enjoy making other than that decadent cream
baklava cheesecake.
Oh,
delicious.
Wow.
Two of my favorite pastries.
You're talking about phyllo pastry. My head just ran to that.
I love that. Yes, delicious.
Oh, well, I'm going to be putting some recipes up on the web so people can get some of those recipes that we've been discussing.
Great.
And it's just been so wonderful having you here with us, Ashley.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
It's been terrific.
Thank you for inviting me.
It makes a change. handed the reins over to somebody else to come up with these beautiful recipes. And beautiful they really are. So, as I say, the book is called Home Cooked and Heartwarming, and it's most certainly all of those. As you can hear, Ashley is really a terrific home cook. She feeds the masses, and have a good yontif, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you very
much. And remember, it's an eat in meat that makes this show complete.